In this episode, you will hear how Kinera Capital, a partner organization of Oiko Credit in India, is supporting small business entrepreneurs all over the country. Harika Shah, the woman behind, left India for quite some years to work as a management consultant around the world. But then she found a gap that needs to be closed. What gap this was and why she wants to give women a seat at her table, you will hear in this episode.
Herzlich willkommen zum Podcast Ethics and Euros. Sina und Karin von Oiko Credit treffen sich auf einen fairen Kaffee mit inspirierenden Talkgästinnen aus aller Welt. Beim Geruch der Kaffeebohne bringen sie Meinungen und Generationen zusammen und sprechen darüber, wie Geld sinnvoll eingesetzt werden kann. Und nun viel Spaß mit Ethics and Euros.
Hello and welcome everyone. My name is Sina and I work for Oiko Credit in Germany. Oiko Credit is a worldwide cooperative that promotes sustainable development by providing loans, investments and capacity building. In this episode, we want to talk about the empowerment of small business entrepreneurs in India. To be precise, today we are talking about Kinera Capital, a partner organization of ours since 2021, based in Bangalore, and the woman behind Kinera Capital, Harika Shah. I'm very happy to be able to interview her today. I was able to visit her personally in her office during the study tour in December. The study tour is actually the perfect opportunity for employees like me who work on the inflow side to see where and how the impact of the money of our investors is being felt. An incredibly impressive experience. But for now, welcome Harika.
Thank you so much for having me, Sina.
Amazing that you're here. Can you tell me who Kinera Capital is and what kind of services or products you offer your clients?
Yes, so Kinera Capital is a fintech NBFC, non-banking finance company, and our focus is the micro enterprises in India. We provide unsecured business loans to micro enterprises across multiple states in the south and west of India. And to give you some context of that, we've disbursed over 125,000 loans in our journey of last decade plus. And, you know, just even a bigger, maybe more national context to that, there are 70 million MSMEs. We call them MSMEs, micro, small, medium enterprises. You'll hear me say these terms regularly, so I want to make sure I calibrate that up front. But there are 70 million MSMEs in India that, you know, employ over 100 million people. And I know in Germany, it's the actually small business segment that is 40% and growing. Whereas here, you know, the 70 million MSMEs are essentially more 90% of the segment and growing, and they contribute 30% of the GDP. So it's a very important segment for us, but it's also a segment that has often been left out in terms of financial inclusion, in terms of access to capital. And that's what Kinera Capital is endeavoring to do, is provide fast and flexible unsecured business loans for working capital, for machinery finance, for business development for these small businesses.
So we usually invite our guests to a cup of coffee or chocolate, because actually I normally don't drink coffee. But due to it's early in the morning for me, it's not for Harika, it's afternoon for her. I just brought a little coffee for myself. Harika, did you too?
I actually have a very large glass of cold water. It is warm today in Bangalore, about 35 degrees. So
wow.
I need to hydrate.
Yes, please stay hydrated. It's not that warm in Germany right now. I think we have like 12 degrees and it's raining. So never mind. But I'll try that coffee. It's actually a bio espresso, 100% Arabica, that is produced by one of our partners, Norandino. And it's made by Fede Cocagua, a corporate association that protects the livelihoods of indigenous smallholders in Guatemala through organic farming. So I'll just
enjoy.
Thank you.
Great.
Actually, therefore that I don't really enjoy coffee. It's really good right now. So I'm getting awake. Amazing. So Harika, I know, because I met you also in December, you say that Kinera can take a user from loan inquiry to loan disbursement within 24 hours. So I think a lot of companies in Germany would dream about this. How do you manage it?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, there are two things. One is the digital, you know, infrastructure that India has been investing in over the last decade, which has provided this thrust. And on top of that, we have built, you know, tremendous technology of our own that allows us to, you know, to fast track a lot of the verification processes, right? Now, KYC process, et cetera, is now very simpler and easier to do on the public infrastructure that India has. But then we have built data science models so that we can do loan decisioning without needing to have a traditional mechanism of, you know, of credit officers doing credit committees and files being sent back and forth. It's all digital end to end. Decisioning gets done fast. We go from, you know, the first hello to money in the bank in 24 hours, and we do it with our field teams visiting the customer, interacting with the customer, verifying the information on the ground, and still getting that money out the door to them.
Nice. Is there anything in addition to Kinara services that is necessary for this fast process at a socio-political level?
If I step back and talk about digitization in India, that is, you know, 10, 12, 15 years in the making, the first and the biggest challenge for any country is, who is this person, right? And so when we're thinking of a loan that we want to give or any kind of financial services for that matter, who is this individual? Do we know them? Can we verify them? So identity is that base layer that is critical, and that identity was established when India went on a program or created this program called Aadhaar, which is essentially a social security identity for every Indian national. And imagine doing that for, you know, a billion plus people over the last several years. And when that has been put in place, you know, then what we could then do is say, okay, now we know identity. Now we, you know, now what is the next level? How can we use this information for providing services? And so, you know, the services pieces are across the board. There are services from, you know, social benefit services, there are medical services, and of course, you know, financial services is another user of that information. The other side of that coin is, one, fine, you have identity and, you know, people can access and validate your identity. But how do I get you to engage in a digital method? So the proliferation of smartphones today, India has over a billion smartphones across the country. The proliferation of practically free data that is now available on every smartphone and enabled an engagement model with all of the Indian, you know, communities, whether the business or students, in different ways, so that we could access information, we could access maybe initially entertainment, but now, you know, information for use, for personal use and for personal growth. And that is the second enabler, where if you think of giving credit, it really needs both these elements to come together. And it's not something any one company could have solved for. So, you know, India taking such a forward-looking view, and frankly, even the regulator taking a forward-looking view on how to engage and how to integrate with all of these services, has made it possible for Kinara to also be able to do those loans in a very fast manner.
Everything coming together. Like you mentioned, like all the smartphones, also digital payment is a big thing in India. We were really surprised. Actually, when we left your office out there, there was a man selling coconuts and we wanted to have some coconuts. And yeah, one of our colleagues from India, he paid with his smartphone. That's actually UPI? Still not common. Yes, it was that one. Yeah. So that was actually a big thing for us. We took videos and we're like, wow, that's so different in Germany.
It is amazing. Not only that, I mean, you know, like even small payments like this, using this basically free network of payment that is a government initiative that really is has been transformative for small businesses, you know, to get and give money and individuals to engage with each other, right? About a billion plus transactions are getting done on a monthly basis on that network. And these are the sort of the rails that have been set out, right? Even our customers, frankly, at times will pay us on the UPI network back if they miss a payment, et cetera. So we see that benefit in both directions. We see it in terms of their consumers using it. So we know what their verifiable income is, and we see it that their ability to pay us back on it as well.
So actually, this really short process doesn't harbor any risks, but sounds more safe because German thinking is like, that process is kind of short. So maybe you can't check everything, but it's actually the other way around with the digitalization, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's always risk, right? We should be aware and mindful of it. And, you know, but generally the ecosystem is built on top of so many layers to eliminate or at least mitigate as much of that risk as is possible so that people are able to have a seamless experience.
When it comes to paying back the loans, are there any financial trainings for your customers or anything you offer to support them?
Yeah. I mean, look, we do grow with Kinara series, but just to maybe I'll give a little bit of a color commentary on who our customer is and how they have also transformed since we've been working with them and with the digitization that is across the country. So first of all, our customer is typically a first generation entrepreneur in manufacturing or trading or services sector. 40% of our customers are in manufacturing, small scale manufacturing, doing, you know, component manufacturing like parts for cars or machine components that go into, you know, other things like helicopters and other industries. Mm. And the other group is traders that are essentially food, fashion, pharma, furniture, anything that is, any kind of traditional trading business you can think of. So this customer is a first generation entrepreneur. They're already quite mindful. It's taken them a lot of time to figure out, you know, how to start their business, how to fund their business, how to start their business. And so from that sense, they are quite conscious and aware of the capital that they have and what it means. Now, over the last decade, the other thing that has increased in India is the use of credit bureaus. The regulator, RBI, Reserve Bank of India, has made it a requirement that every financial institution must report all of the loan details, payments and non-payments we have four credit bureaus in the country, to all four credit bureaus in the country. And what that has done is it has, in the early years, we would go out and would spend time with our customers. You know, when we disbursed a loan, we would call our customers, we would welcome them, and then we would train them about what is a credit bureau, why it is important to maintain good repayment, because if we don't, we will have to report it to the credit bureau. And if you report it to the credit bureau, your score will be impacted, and that will impact access for future credit. 10 years later, we don't need to do that anymore. I think, you know, in fact, the customers themselves are always, you know, aware. They now know how to access their own credit bureau's, you know, score without any help. With all of this digitization and access to just YouTube and videos on so many of these things, that piece has been unlocked. Now, where they need help and what we help them with, and we run a series called Grow with Kinara, is how to keep abreast of new technology, how to keep thinking of, you know, expanding their business. For example, how to use WhatsApp for business, or how do you create a Google your business page so that you can be, you know, somebody can find you in your local neighborhood. These are things that they still are not sure of how to go about doing. And we help them with that far more than, you know, financial literacy in the traditional sense.
When I came to your office, I was like, I wouldn't say surprised, but I was like deeply impressed by you as a person. So you're such a power woman. You spent two decades as a management consultant around the world in the US, in the EU and Asia Pacific. Before you became a social entrepreneur yourself, you spent a decade as a mentor in the social impact field. You left India for quite some years. So why did you come back to start your business back in India?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, back in India is an easy answer. This is truly this is the next frontier. If we step away from nations in general and, you know, boundaries and all of that and borders, we are talking about 1.3 billion people. We're talking about a thriving economy. We're talking about a GDP that's 6-7% year on year. It is really poised to be in the top five economic powers of the world over the next 5-10 years. So action is here. But within that thriving, bustling economy, there is this divide that I saw that was real and also personal. I mean, real because you could see that while the small businesses drive the economy, they are often on the fringe of inclusion in terms of finance and financial services and other services as well. And personal because that's what I remembered from my own childhood. My mom used to be a small business owner, and I remembered her. She had this idea that she wanted to have a string of small, what were essentially, you know, small provision stores in the neighborhood that, or in the suburb that we lived in. But it was next to impossible for her to do that. She had one store, and that's kind of where she, you know, that's where she could barely keep that, you know, keep that going, purely because of access to capital. So both those things for me came together. I looked at this divide and thought that, listen, something needs to be attempted here. Something needs to be shifted in our mindset that unsecured business lending is a fool's errand. You know, we need to trust that most people that are capital starved are really just trying to get one foot ahead of another, just trying to survive, just trying to build, just trying to grow themselves, their businesses, the impact to their communities in some way, and figuring out the way to do that. This might sound cheesy, but it felt like a little bit of a calling this was my calling in life, and I felt like after 20 years and, you know, in all of these lovely parts of the world and learning from large, mega, complex companies on businesses, that it was time to perhaps take some of those learnings, some of those practices, some of those good things and apply it to a country that needs it and an area that has not been given its due attention.
Great. I think I can remember that you told me in December that you've been away for quite some years and you actually forgot about the problem existing for some years in India. Yeah, you saw the gap that you wanted to fix for the MSMEs also because of your mom. That's actually really, really nice story. Kinara Capital is led by a woman majority management team. Why is that, and which advantages or challenges come with it?
The why part is actually very straightforward. I felt I think this is a global problem. This is not just an India problem, but it certainly is perhaps more visible in India than not, right? So when I start, let's just talk about entrepreneurship. Only 3% of female founders in the world get capital, right, to run their businesses. If we look at the global 500, you'll be hard pressed to find enough companies with women running those global 500s. So we are really seeing whether it's entrepreneurship, whether it is executive leadership, whether it is, you know, even in our segment, whether it is the micro enterprises, you know, even in India, when we talk about 70 million MSMEs, hardly 10, 11% of them are women owned and operated. So we see this problem across the board. And so when you look at, and I spent 20 years as a professional, and we have talked, the narrative for all of us has been about the glass ceiling. Why is there a glass ceiling? You know, we do the same type of work. We work just as hard, but why is it that those opportunities don't come to us as women as easily? And when I started Kinara, I was very clear in my mind that I would open that door, essentially create a seat at the table every chance I get for exactly the same people who have great qualifications, great outlook, perspective. They work just as hard. They're trying to do the same, push for the same goals as the company goals, but are stuck where they are for whatever reason. And often one of the reasons being that they are not a man. So that was just a simple objective. Now I'm really thrilled that we've been able to do that. 60% of my management team being women is all of my departments, right? My CFO is a woman. My CRO is a woman. My chief audit head, my chief head of HR. I mean, just across the board, every chance we have gotten, we have really just pushed to get some, you know, some parity at the table. And it's important. It's important because if we don't do that, you know, today 55% of my head office is women, and our attrition in our women colleagues versus our male colleagues is significantly lower. Very similarly in our customer base, our women customers, we run a Harvikas program, which is a special program for women entrepreneurs where we give discounted loans. And also we give, you know, startup loans. This is a new version, Harvikas 2.0, we have just launched, where we give startup loans to small business entrepreneurs or women, giving them like a holiday period and interest-free, time to start paying their loans, et cetera, to help them get going into that formalization of that loan, of their business. What we see across the board is that we all aspire for something, but we need role models. And we see that, you know, attrition in our head office is lower, or amongst our female colleagues is lower than our male colleagues. We see that our Harvikas customers are better paying customers, you know, in terms of non-performing assets. We see that our Harvikas customers actually hire more women themselves. So a third of the jobs created by Harvikas customers go to women, whereas maybe 20% or 25% of that created by our male colleagues, male customers go to women. So again, every chance we get when we include women in the conversation and in the decision making, there are better outcomes, and that's what we are looking for. The disadvantage you asked about this, I don't see this as a disadvantage at all. I see that our conversations at our, you know, at our leadership meetings, our executive meetings are much deeper, are much honest. You don't have that sense necessarily of constantly beating our own or tooting our own horns. It is more about let's get to work. This has been done. This we are behind. This we need to fix. This we need to move forward. It is always about solving for the problem. And I find that conversation a much more productive conversation. And I also find that it has softened some of our male colleagues as well in, recognizing their own biases at times when we call them out on it. And you can only do that when there's enough people at the table who are empowered to say something.
Nice. So a really good mixture also for the male colleagues and like a lot of female colleagues. Okay, you mentioned Harvikas, the program for women. Is every woman like directly part of the program? Can you choose? And how long is the program running?
Yeah. So every, during the loan process, when we identify that the business is owned or operated by a woman, or she is a partner in the business. So sometimes we see, combinations of our mother-daughter combination as well. Automatically, our models will, give a discounted loan. And this is where I think our data science models do a great job of first not having a bias of who is actually coming into the loan flow, but deciding on that loan, through the model in an unbiased and automated manner. But on the back end of it, once that identification is there, it automatically also provides a discount to that loan. So that discount is, and again, we're running multiple programs on the Harvikas program, where they get an interest rate reduction. That interest rate reduction is for the duration of the loan. On the Harvikas 2.0, where we have this program for startup businesses, and there what I mean is a lot more women-led businesses are home businesses. And often when women want to take those businesses into a more formal setup, they get stuck because they need capital to get started. They need to invest in a rental location, maybe in machinery or technology or there are startup costs for every business, as we know. So for that, we have given, we have a program in that program, they can take up to a 6 month, basically a payment holiday. So there's interest free for 6 months. They don't have to pay any EMI. They don't have to pay any principal. It doesn't get tagged on to their loan for the duration of the loan. So it is actually truly free to them for those 6 months. It gives them that capital upfront to get going. And then they can start paying once they are sort of settling in and have started their business in a more formal setup 6 months down the line. So that's the second program we run. For all of our women customers within our Grow with Kinara series, we run special programs where there's networking of women entrepreneurs with other women entrepreneurs. Often we find that small business owners, already the networking opportunities are limited, but most definitely there isn't really a place or a forum for women entrepreneurs to come together at a local geo level. And since we have a last mile branch network, we are able to bring women together and so they can speak in their own language, they can interact with others, they can share their challenges. And you know, it's a very powerful experience to see that on the ground when these women entrepreneurs come together and just talk it out.
So the program also has a community aspect. So some of them also get friends after that, or?
Friends, but more often than not, networking means business opportunities, right? So they become buyers, sellers, they become providers. And if nothing, they become, you know, a person somebody can call to solve for a similar problem they may have, like a logistics issue or a transportation of their goods or, you know, a services issue, etc.
Nice. So what would you say, what kind of changes can you see in the personal lives, like of your end clients, but also in the region through this financing?
So let me just start with our objective. You know, our objective has always been, how do we transform lives, livelihoods, and local economies? Yeah, and to do that, what it means is that we need to think of not only the entrepreneur, but the entire unit as the beneficiary. And for us, when we essentially enable capital access to small businesses, they hire people. So we have seen, you know, 100,000 plus jobs created. They already have people employed who also expand and grow in terms of, you know, sustainability of jobs. We've seen, you know, over half a million jobs sustained. And so then if you look at that community impact of that, you know, over a million people are impacted because each person at least supports 2 to 3 other people within their communities, as we talk about a segment that is very bottom of the pyramid segment. Now, for the entrepreneur itself, we see business revenues go up by 20%, and which means that their income, because most of these entrepreneurs are sole proprietors, are single owners, essentially, their incomes go up by 20%. And that is critical because most of the times, as we all know, families, when their incomes go up, you will invest in education, health, right? So all of these, you know, all of these things that help us be stronger as communities. So, you know, largely when I step away and think of, we have created jobs to first-time job seekers is about 30%. To women, it's about, you know, 25%. And then we have increased incomes and essentially sustained livelihoods for about a million people.
Wow. I know it was quite a journey to get to the point of working together with Oiko Credit in India. Maybe you want to tell that little story?
Well, I think it was often about timing, right? I met Jesu very early on. You know, I would say bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about this idea that I'm working on and how I'm going to go about it. And he was very interested to, you know, continue talking, but we were just too early. We were too small. Mm-hmm. We were too early. When we got to about a book size of 10 million, we turned profitable. I called him again and I said, hey, you know, we are now a 10 million book and we are profitable. You know, can we start a conversation? And again, I think we were a little too small in our portfolio. And then to be fair, there were so many macro events that happened in India that nobody could have predicted. We had demonetization in 2016. We had a goods and services tax that got, you know, rolled out across the country in 2017, which created huge supply chain challenges. We had, you know, large financial services, financial, you know, behemoths sort of break down in ILFS and in DHFL back to back in 2018 and 19. So a lot of things were going on. And of course, COVID, which happened to all of us everywhere in the world. So a lot of things were going on that just, you know, kind of the timing never synced up. And in the middle of it, we also had, you know, we ended up getting investors, we're getting lenders. So we couldn't quite get to the right pricing. When we got the timing right, we couldn't get to the right pricing because we were able to get access to capital that was slightly cheaper than Oiko credit. And that's always the trade-off for, you know, that happens. But persistence counts, just like our entrepreneurs who don't give up. You know, I think both Oiko Credit and Kinara have always wanted to be able to, you know, make something happen. And we finally did that 3-4 years ago. And today we are, what, on a third loan, possibly, you know, third, fourth loan, you know, or 10 plus million and more in the pipeline being discussed. So very, very happy with where we have landed, regardless of how long it took us all to get here.
That's great to hear. So why did you be that strong about, like, I want to work together with Oiko Credit as a partner? What distinguishes Oiko Credit from other lenders?
Values. I think that one of the things that we saw, and if you think, you know, and this reflection of this is actually, in the end, when we did end up working together, is the absolute reflection of that. I mean, you started this conversation, your podcast at the very beginning, talking about how you work with so many disenfranchised communities across the globe, that they're inbuilt into that is empathy and compassion. And, you know, I'll tell you why I say that's important and why we continue to want to work with Oiko Credit is exactly the loan that we finally did get going was in 2021. Now, while we think of COVID as 2020 phenomenon, in India, 2021 was devastating. We had this massive wave of Delta. We had a huge loss of life. You know, we had no relief from the government or the regulator. At least in the first wave, there was moratorium. There was, you know, there was an emergency credit guarantee line. A lot of those things were not there the second year. And so you can imagine lenders tend to, you know, because they are looking at deploying capital, looking at the risk, and foreign lenders in those scenarios were looking at the risk in India at that point in time compared to perhaps, you know, things were settling elsewhere. And that's when Oiko Credit did come in and say, you know what, this is the right time. If we don't support what we're doing, and that's what I talk about value alignment, if we don't do something now, you know, where, you know, when the nation needs it, the MSMEs need it, right? This is every capital, because we've been profitable, every capital we take from any of our lenders is all going straight to the borrowers, to our borrowers, because it's for on lending purposes. And so it was a straight line. The capital we would receive would go to actually support communities, actually support entrepreneurship, and, you know, and what was happening in terms of the small businesses. And we ran a back to business program at that time to you know, give capital back to small businesses who were just struggling to get out of that. And, you know, they have been fantastic ambassadors of Kinara. And this is what I mean. Value alignment is supremely important.
So what, in your opinion, is the special connection between Kinara and Oiko Credit? Is it all about values?
And I know Manavia is the Indian, you know, the Indian subsidiary, essentially. What I see Manavia doing, not just with us, with other partners in the ecosystem, you know, and operating in that ecosystem. And also what I see in the forward thought process, right, of how do we build a larger platform for this? How do we, you know, how do, for example, we were having some co-lending conversations at one point. How do we create a larger platform we can continue to support where we take joint risk, right? So, so innovation or expansion of what you're doing, of your mission in different formats, is also valuable because it's not just Kinara, right? The ecosystem, there are others who can benefit from that and are also part of the Manavia book. So that expansion is important because you need, in India, you need several people to establish a baseline before, say, banks will start considering, you know, opening up the capital access for businesses like ours, right?
What is your vision for Kinara for the next 5 years?
So I think it goes a long way. Well, I mean, to me, I would say that it's twofold. On one side, look, what we are doing has and is adding value. We want to continue to do that. And we want to do that at scale. And with that, you know, over the next several years, now today, we are we have disbursed close to $850 million. And our existing assets under management are about half of that, right? It's about close to, you know, $500 million, $450 million. And, you know, I would love for us to be a billion-dollar book over the next 3 to 4 years. And that really is significant because it is establishing that unsecured business lending in India has a real play, real value to the ecosystem, has arrived at scale and has seen the various major macro events and can withstand that just like other businesses can. And so that's one, you know, one element of it, because if we can prove that at scale, I hope we can inspire and encourage others to take that risk, to you know, start similar, you know, businesses in different formats, different ways, different customer segments, different geographic segments, whatever it may be. So we can, you know, unlock that at large for the communities. So that's a big one, because Kinara cannot do this alone, and we need more of, you know, more of the idea, more of the integration of tech into servicing the last mile and across major metros all the way to rural communities. So that's a big one. The second, which I would say is, you know, just as aspirational for us, is to figure out what else can we do for these communities. So giving capital access, that's 101. We need to go beyond that. And, you know, some of the challenges that we are recognizing in other areas, that access to micro insurance is challenging, medical insurance is challenging. Simple example, you know, a small business owner today in India employs 5 to 10 people. There isn't a great medical services program for 10 people. So they have to buy either really expensive individual medical policies for every employee, which is not sustainable for them. Even as family, so, you know, even as family units of 4 or 5 that the entrepreneur is, for them to get the right medical insurance is also expensive. So some of the ideas we've been working with is how can we enable additional value-added services that go beyond capital. Our Grow with Kinara series is you know, sort of a precursor to that. We are seeing what the needs are. We are seeing what they, you know, what additional support they need. And as a nation, as we go and increase the digitization across the board, those digital services and the needs for the services will increase as well. So I hope to create, you know, for us, and I say this is why I say it's aspirational, some sort of a larger platform where, you know, today when we think of search, we think of Google, that maybe when we think of, you know, for MSMEs, when they think of support, that they think of Kinara.
That would be great. I really hope so, Radhika. Really nice. So there are a lot of key takeaways for me as well. Also about your really great program, Helvikas for Women. Also, like to hear again that COVID in India was a totally different thing than in Germany. And also to give a seat to at a table for people with great qualifications, but they are stuck because they are not a man. So thank you very much, Radhika, for that great insight in Kinara Capital and your great work in India. Thank you so much for joining the session.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been a pleasure.
Karen is going to moderate the next episode. It will be end of June, and the guest will be a German partner organization, Ecoligo, who is driving an energy transition worldwide. The next episode will be in German. I wish you a good day. Thanks for listening. Bye.